You're listening to the OneOfUs.net Podcast Network.
One of Us is a podcast and video network funded all but entirely by donations and subscriptions. We do accept pitches for audio-based or banner ads, but on a case-by-case basis. If you're interested in that, contact us at oneofusnet@gmail.com. With the amount of audio and video content we generate, it is expensive and extremely time-consuming to keep things running. Please go to the webpage oneofus.net and sign up for a subscription at $2, $5, $10, or $25 and get a ton of bonus content. One of Us needs and appreciates all your support.
Do you love sci-fi, horror, and fantasy films? Then grab a badge for Otherworlds Film Festival, the country's premier sci-fi film festival. There'll be Q&As, panels, parties, and mixers. Rub elbows with up-and-coming and established filmmakers, as well as like-minded filmgoers. Come celebrate our 7th year, December 3rd through 6th, at the Galaxy Highland in Austin, Texas. Badges are now for sale at OtherworldsFilmFest.com. That's OtherworldsFilmFest.com.
Gosh, it was only a few years ago that I remember going, Paramount, listen, we don't care about the Kelvinverse that much. That's fine. That's like a nice little bonus extra. Sure, the movies are fine. But we kind of like some more Star Trek TV shows. Well, I couldn't have been the only one saying it because Paramount apparently listened because there's a lot of Star Trek TV shows now and many more on the way. Embarrassment of riches, because not only did we get a new ship, with this upcoming third season, the Discovery is actually going to a timeline that has never been explored whatsoever in the Star Trek universe, which is something I also was like, please do that. And then they're like, hey, why don't we get Picard back and do a whole show about him? Wow, are you reading my mind, Paramount? Great, great job. And then they're like, really? Have we only ever done one animated Star Trek show? And then I went, well, I don't know, Paramount. Hold on. What are you talking about here exactly? Well, like, you know, like funny, like for kids. I was like, well, not for kids, but for big dorks like me who want to see referencing constantly to the most obscure shit that ever happened in Star Trek so we can laugh with a recognizable, ha-ha, I recognize that reference. We're talking about Star Trek Lower Decks, and I've got my own deck crew here with me. I've got Marco.
Hello, hello.
I've got Doggett.
Doggett.
And Elliot.
Aye, aye.
Wow, this is the 9th Star Trek television series. That's crazy. It's the 10th if you include short treks, but I don't. When I found out this is a guy they got, Mike McCann, who created the show Solar Opposites with Justin Roiland and also worked on South Park, Drawn Together. He was one of the main writers and producers on Rick and Morty. That sounds like the right guy, but I hope he knows this is should not just be Rick and Morty set in Star Trek. And I feel like ultimately he did get that. There's no question to me that the writers of this show are huge dorks for Star Trek.
To kind of circle back to something you were talking about earlier, Chris, you're right that this is going to be a big push now that all of the networks are getting their own streaming services and they're looking at their catalogs and going, what do we have that can make money and that we can hold as exclusives to draw people to the site? And you start looking at something like Star Trek and thinking, wow, there's a lot of potential there. We've been spending all this time trying to make things happen at the cinema, and it's maybe not working as well as we hoped. Why don't we just put all of our efforts into television? And I think we're going to start seeing more of that. It's certainly Disney and Lucasfilm is doing that with the Star Wars franchise. I think they're doing the same thing with Marvel. I mean, before long, we're going to start getting more Marvel series. This is kind of a good thing for fans like us who want a variety rather than dealing with like one movie that maybe wasn't everything we wanted it to be. Maybe there's two or three series and you can find one that you can just go, yes, this is my thing. This is what I'm going to be into now.
Plus, doing it as an animated series, this particular one, is like, oh, well, you can get back any classic cast member and they can voice a younger version of themselves, which they do, in fact, finally do in the final episode this season of Lower Decks. Actually, I guess technically the episode before that they did it too.
Are we going to spoil this?
You might have to spoil it to get people to watch it.
You may not be wrong. The basic idea is, so it's a ship called the USS Cerritos. It is a minor ship in the fleet, all things considered. But we follow, instead of the main bridge crew, who are indeed cast members on the show as well, we're really following, as it says, Star Trek Lower Decks, we're following the Lower Decks crew people, the people who are ensigns. And this actually is named after an original episode of The Next Generation, which did pretty much just that, just not quite as satirically. We've got Tawny Newsom as Beckett Mariner, who is secretly the daughter of the captain of the ship, and she doesn't want anyone to know. They clearly have a contentious relationship. She's constantly trying to cause trouble, and one of the big questions of the first season that I feel really comes to a head towards the end is, why are you even doing this? You clearly are capable of being really good at what you do. You're very competent. You're kind of a badass, but there's a moment that comes to make the right or wrong decision, and you can see you hesitate, and then you make the wrong decision every time. Then you've got Jack Quaid as Brad Boimler. Now, when the show starts, it appears that Brad is the main character, but I would argue that Beckett decidedly is. But sure. He's a total nerd of an ensign who is a stickler for the rules. He just wants to become a captain someday. He's a Star Trek nerd himself. And you've got Devana Utendi, who is a Orion, which, you know, traditionally are slavers or slaves, and she herself takes that kind of personally, played by Noelle Wells, and she works in the medical bay on the Cerritos. She also is a big Star Trek nerd herself, a Starfleet nerd, who's just constantly excited about every new thing that happens. You've got Eugene Cordero as Sam Rutherford, who is got a recent new cyborg implant, basically making him the Lobot of the Star Trek universe, I guess.
A much more talkative Lobot.
Yeah. He's like a young Geordi LaForge. He's like super into engineering and is like incredibly excited about everything that's going on there. Got Dawn Lewis as the captain of the Cerritos, Carol Freeman, who's capable but kind of annoyed that her starship is basically like, she doesn't get first contact, she gets follow-up contact.
Yeah, they're the second contact crew, and I love that that's been introduced into canon. They're like, yeah, the Enterprise gets to make first contact because they're cool. You're the B team. You do the second contact. You show up with like supplies and radios and, hey, here's your welcome to the Federation orientation package.
Yeah, the care package delivery service.
Jerry O'Connell plays Jack Ransom, who is the human first officer of the ship, who is basically, they're playing him off like a parody of William Riker. And I would argue maybe a little too much. Like, I got it from the first episode. There's a Bajoran tactical officer played by Fred Tatasciore. I don't know if I'm saying that correctly or not. Shax. He himself is kind of a parody of Worf. Ultra gung-ho. His answer to everything is fire phasers.
Yeah. Please let me launch the warp core. Like, no. Please? No, but I've been good.
The Gillian Vigman plays Ta'ana, who is the doctor, head of medical aboard the Cerritos, who is basically a cat. Not even basically, he's a cat person. And that comes with all the annoying things that cats do as well, which they do. Apparently, this references a Star Trek The Animated Series episode, which I was unaware of, where there is a member of the species that is represented. But that's the basic crew. There's lots of other people who appear along the way here, including appearances by some classic Next Generation characters and villains. I was very pleased when that happened, let me tell you what. I was like, you should see, I was watching this with my wife, and I was like, oh my God, they actually got them to voice it. And she's like, calm down. What are you excited about?
Oh, don't worry. I heard you from the other side of Texas.
Yeah, I did squee. This is 10 episodes. They're less than 30 minutes long. They start off kind of irreverent. They're character set up. But I felt like as they went along, I started to get into this more. I was a little annoyed at first by the incessant amount of referencing to the other shows, where I'm like, I get it, but would anybody actually talk this way? But after a while, I thought it calmed down a bit, and they actually started to give these characters more of an arc. And by the time we got to the halfway point, I admit I was fully into this.
That is also a well-established Star Trek tradition, where it takes several episodes, sometimes more than one season, for a series to find its groove. And that really happened here. It took me a while to warm up to it because it has the classic Star Trek A plot and B plot, but usually the B plot is very light and comical and less consequential. Here it was like both plots were kind of inconsequential, and all of the actors seemed it seems as if they were directed to just say their lines as fast as possible. And I was like, slow the fuck down. Let me get to know who these people are first. But after about 3 or 4 episodes, like you, Chris, I finally started to get into it.
It finds its footing, and I think it continues to solidify that footing as the show goes on.
In the beginning, it felt a little rocky, especially with all the references and stuff. Probably around the episode where Ensign Tendi makes a dog was about the point where I sort of jumped on board.
You mean surrendered to the show's charm?
Yes, exactly.
Oh. Doggett, were you in from the beginning?
Man, you saw how the season opened up. I was in. You know what? I'll go ahead and say it. It's the best edition of Star Trek.
Oh, boy.
Well, that's bold.
To be fair, it's the only one I've seen besides the first two Star Trek movies from J.J. Abrams.
Wait, are you serious? You've never seen any other Star Trek other than this?
I've never seen any of the original series. I've never seen any of the Deep Space Nine, Next Generation, all those.
Good God.
I've never seen any of the movies. I've never seen Rafa Khan. Come at me.
So you loved this, even though, like, every third line is a reference to some obscure thing that happened on Star Trek The Next Generation or the original series.
I never understood this about when people complain about fan service, especially when it's done well, because I don't fully have to understand something to understand, like, okay, I can see what the joke's going for. Is this going to land? It lands!
Well, that was part of my issue, because it was going so fast.
I got relatives. I don't speak Spanish, but I look at their gestures, and I see how they're changing their tones. It's like, oh, that's funny.
You'd be a riot at a stand-up comedy club in Mexico, I can imagine.
Oh, man, when he called that guy a pendejo, it was so funny. I have no idea what else he was saying, but that last word made me laugh.
This did make me want to see more stuff with these characters, for sure. It definitely makes a really unexpected decision in the last episode with one of the cast members. I was like, wait, did they just do that?
For a series that is remarkably lighthearted and irreverent and not particularly canon queeny, even though it's playing with the canon, mm-hmm. It actually has an emotionally affecting ending. And that's kind of when I was like, okay, finally, this is kind of doing what I want Star Trek to do. At the end of the day, I just want good Star Trek. It's great that we have this funny take on it, but it's just making fun of the thing that I miss. And they managed to kind of bring it back and, you know, go, oh, yes, that's right. We are still Star Trek and we still deal with some of these themes and ideas. And we're going to explore the character, which is something they had not done really very well. Because, you know, in comedy, characters don't get to grow very much because once they grow, they're not funny anymore. And here, there's definitely room for growth in a second season.
Which, by the way, they were making at the same time as the first season, so I would expect the second season not to be very far off at all. I mean, they greenlit both two seasons at once, which is cool because this ends on a sort of, well, wow, where are they going to go from here? It takes place right after the end of Star Trek Next Generation. I think it's like 2 years. So it ends up much more firmly locked into the memories and canon of The Next Generation than anything else. And that's interesting because even Picard, which, you know, obviously takes place post Next Generation, is so long after that when it does do something, it's like, look, it's another thing from Star Trek. The show kind of stops for it. Here it's just constant because they're still in that world. They're like, oh, it's this thing. You know this thing. And it's Lower Decks. It's day to day. Here's another mission. Here's another mission. Here's another mission. Not one solid story. So they have room to do stuff like have like them show up at a Gorn wedding or have the what's the little floating robot thing?
Oh, God. Yeah.
They were in a Next Generation episode that was about like, oh, they've become sentient, so we cannot take them apart.
Right. And now they're members of the Federation and can serve on the bridge. You know?
Exactly. I was like, there's stuff like that constantly in here. You don't have to know that they were in a Next Generation episode, but it makes it that much funnier that it was.
I'll take your word for it.
Well, now you have to go watch Star Trek Next Generation.
So I just skip the first one then?
Oh, no, you watch the first one too. This just references Next Generation more than it does the first one, that's all.
It's definitely designed by people and for people who fell in love with The Next Generation. I think that's where it's coming from. That's probably the series that is most familiar to the audience. and to the creators. And setting it in that particular timeline means that they can have classic characters come back in. You couldn't do that if you were trying to do it with the original series, because unfortunately, so many of those actors are no longer with us. And I thought this was going to be more like the Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead of Star Trek. Like, I thought we were going to get like a classic episode, except we're going to tell it from the perspective of all like minor characters in the background, which I thought would be interesting. And we ended up getting a brand new set of characters on a brand new ship on a brand new mission. And I actually really preferred that. It just took a while for the chemistry among the cast to click, because that's the great thing about Star Trek. You have a bridge crew and you can shuffle them around. And every time you put those characters in a new scenario, you have kind of new dramatic potential. Whereas really, the A plot in this is always Boimler and Mariner, and the B plot is always Tandy and Rutherford. And I'm like, I kind of want to see them get mixed up a little bit or work together more.
Like most first seasons, a lot of this is just setting up the beats for all these characters. Who are they? What is their crisis in their background? Yada, yada. And this really did, in a first season, give us a lot about all these people. But Elliot, you've said very little so far. I don't even know if you're really a huge Star Trek fan or if this was new to you as well.
I am actually a huge Star Trek fan. Some guy called Cyrus on an old site that's not around anymore.
Ah, that guy's terrible. It.
I watched a few episodes of TOS growing up, but I really fell in love with the show through Next Generation, which I watched in college. And then I watched DS9 recently, so I'm pretty familiar with Star Trek. I would say I probably got about 85% of the references in this. One thing that I would sort of quibble about the show with is I wish it was set a little bit more in the future. I realize that sort of limits your ability to have classic characters come back, but having TNG sort of be history might have explained why so many of their adventures are now sort of lore in Starfleet.
Wait, I don't remember seeing Lore. Was he in here?
Oh. Yeah, he was right next to Cyrus in his wheelchair, and now he only communicates with a single beeping light.
So I thought it was going to be a kids' show. Really right up until I think I saw the first episode and went, oh, okay, this is actually for... I mean, I think, you know, kids could watch this and enjoy it, but it's definitely adults are going to get the most enjoyment out of it.
What was your first clue when she dove that blade into that dude's leg?
Was it all the talk about getting drunk and high? And all the talk about partying on the starships and how lame everyone on the bridge crew is?
How that one cyborg dude wants to fuck the ship so bad?
he wants to get all up in those Jeffries tubes.
Oh. Well, why don't we go into final thoughts? Elliot, keep going into your final thoughts.
I think, like all of you, I think this show picked up for me about 3 or 4 episodes in. I don't think I disliked any episodes. I just, the first few were a little kind of weak, kind of rough, kind of reminded me of some of the lesser TNG episodes that I often skip over when I do a rewatch. I always liked the characters right from the start. They always had a good energy and a good rapport. I mean, I think the first scene opens with Mariner and Boimler and really just hooked you right into their dynamic. It's great they're using animation. It really allows them to do more things with less money, so they can go a lot more places, do a lot more interesting things. I really enjoyed this show. Didn't quite reach the highest high for me, but I'm always on the lookout for a good Star Trek show, and I'll be honest, I haven't been super enthused about Discovery or Picard. So this is actually probably my favorite Star Trek show after Next Generation and Deep Space Nine. I'm going to have to give this season 8.5 nasty boy thoughts out of 10.
Dog it.
Well, I don't understand what the rest of you nerds are talking about. I took theater. I really enjoyed this. It reminds me a lot of stuff like Final Space. That was something kind of like this a little bit. I think you don't need to be a fan of Star Trek to enjoy this. If you're somebody who gets annoyed at fan service stuff, I don't think this has too much of it that it would annoy you. I really enjoyed all the characters, especially the ending. The ending was such a moment of one character staying true to themselves that just, like, I squealed a little bit. I'm gonna give this 8 out of 10... J.J. Abrams episodes.
Marco?
I think a lot of it is very rushed, even when the jokes are funny. Characters, they don't always get the time to breathe. They just have to keep pushing ahead and just throwing out one joke after another in the hopes that something sticks. But after a while, the writers do find the voice for those characters, and the actors portraying them kind of get to dig into their personalities a little more. And I really look forward to seeing more of that in season 2. This is actually a really good workplace comedy that just happens to be set in a Star Trek universe. It's the folks who are like having to do the thankless jobs all across the ship and figure out ways to screw off and waste time and cut corners. And they're kind of endearing. I just want them to have an opportunity to be a little bit more front and center next time and get more combinations of these admittedly interesting characters. However, as I said before, the final episode was surprisingly emotionally affecting, and it kind of points to a possible iteration of this series that I would like to see it become. I don't know if it will. Chances are they're just going to go back to square one and start being silly and goofy again. But if they can occasionally have those episodes that are a little heavier, that would be really awesome. Very much worth watching. Highly recommended if you're a Star Trek fan. And there's enough Easter eggs and inside jokes, both for casual fans or hardcore fans, but not so bad that it's going to alienate newcomers. This is definitely worth a watch. I have to give this 8.5 out of 10 statues dedicated to the most important officer in Starfleet history, Chief Miles O'Brien.
Yes.
Okay, was that a Star Trek joke?
Yes, that was.
That was a Next Generation joke and a Deep Space Nine joke.
This was made by a guy who had just come off Rick and Morty, both helped and hurt the show. It helped because, well, obviously he's got a lot of experience with sci-fi comedy, but I think it hurt in the sense that people coming to this expecting it to be Rick and Morty will see shades of that there, but it never does what Rick and Morty does, which is go all the way to the end for the joke, like go as crazy as they want. This can't go as crazy as you want because it's canon in the Star Trek universe. They have said that the events of the show actually happen in the Star Trek universe. It's limited by that. But they lean so heavily into the fact that it is canon and it is taking place into there that if you're a Star Trek fan, especially with the exception of the occasional Doggets out there, this is really, I think, going to work for you more than it's not. It's going to be a little distressing at first because you're like, okay, these guys, they don't behave like we've ever seen Starfleet people behave. And that's because you only see the officers most of the time. And honestly, if you watch Deep Space Nine, sometimes they do, in fact, behave like that. But this crew is irreverent. They're kind of making fun of the situation they're in. The fact that anyone in Starfleet is nerdy for Starfleet, we just never really see that, except maybe with Barclay a little bit.
This is a whole crew of Wesleys.
Of Wesley Snipes. Or Snipes? Not Wesley Snipes. Wesley Crushers. Always bet on Brack. Who's Brack? Oh, he's a Gorn.
That would be a totally different show.
It has trouble at first because the characters, you're like, okay, first off, Beckett Mariner is just an asshole. Why is she such an asshole? She's really kind of annoying. You're like supposed to laugh at her hijinks. But as someone who's a Star Trek fan, I'm like, yo, get it together. Jesus Christ, you're in Starfleet. Act like it. And the show ends up kind of being about her coming to terms with that. And I liked that. That was her arc on there. Some of these other characters could use some more arcs, but I'm sure we'll see that happen. I'm super excited. There's more of these happening. And I'm going to give this 7.5 out of 10 replacements for Engage with just some jazz on the bridge now, when we go into warp.
Now, Chris, you said you don't like Mariner, right? So you didn't like her at first.
I didn't like her at first. I was like, okay, you're kind of obnoxious.
Follow-up question. Were you not a person who had a father who was in a position of power? And were you not a person who ran a car into a food sign?
Yes.
No further questions.
No, more or less, that is true, actually. My dad was a judge, and I rebelled just a bit. But nonetheless, she's in Starfleet.